Welcome to the Man Up Podcast.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
A spiritual oasis for men. We're not pastors, just regular guys.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
So, for the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men, this is Man Up.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Man Up Podcast, your spiritual oasis for men. We are men, and this is a religious podcast. We look at various issues. We have just started a study of a book called Six Battles Every Man Must Win. It's by Bill Perkins. It is available from Amazon.com. We just started last week. You certainly can catch up or just stay right with us as we begin really the meat of the study in this chapter. I'm Steve Titch. I'm filling in for our leader, Bill Cox, who is not with us tonight. With me are two of our regular panelists. Allow me to introduce them. Our first is a prosecutor. He works down in Houston, and as they say in the song, if you're ever in Houston, you better do right, you better not gamble, you better not fight, because you'll find yourself in court against this guy, Mike Cropper. Also with us is our deacon, Kyle Trahan, who is leading this study of Six Battles Every Man Must Win. I'm going to go right to him so he can start us off with this chapter. We're on chapter two.
Thanks, Steve. So, you know, as you said, lesson two, chapter two. It's called The Great Angelic Conflict. You know, the author starts in talking about bizarre experiments. So he says, you know, he's not sure who dreams up these bizarre experiments, but one performed, let's see, National Institute of Mental Health illustrates what sometimes happens to Christian men in our society. And then he goes on to talk about, they have a cage, and they start, the cage is designed to hold 160 mice, and in 2.5 years, the mice grow from what they started at 8 to 2,200. And so what happens when they got to that kind of a multitude is they started to form little cliques. They started to get very dominant. The females got very aggressive and mm-hmm. would force out the young. The whole society in itself started to break down. And then what is after 5 years, all the mice had died. Even though there was an abundance of food, water, and resources, and an absence of disease. So, you know, what happens to us as men, at least the way I see it, is just as we get more and more populated, it's easier for us to fall into the background and just, you know, fade in, you know. But what we need to remember is that, you know, this is that conflict. And it is a war that we're supposed to fight. So, you know, as far as Man Up is concerned, this is exactly what it's supposed to mean. You know, stepping up to the plate no matter what. You know, I know for Sunday I kind of did it a little differently since I called in on Sunday. I was out of town. So I was sitting in a very manly room, actually. Kind of wish we could decorate our room a little bit the same way.
Get some club chairs. We're on podcast. We can say we're sitting in club chairs.
We could. That's right.
Fireplace going on. A billiard table over there.
Some deer, you know, yes. Hanging out, because that's where I was. Is we had one on the wall and some little, you know, skins on the floor. But you know, I figured as normal, this is just a great discussion. For the fellas, and we'll just kind of go through no real forum as far as I'm concerned.
You mind if I mention something?
Exactly what I'm saying.
Well, good deal. The author addresses something that we find ourselves doing, and it's important you put life in perspective that he's talking about the mice in a particular cage. What they are, they're in a cage that doesn't grow with their birth and their population explosion that they have, I think. And this is what Kyle is leading us, telling us without getting all to the points. And it's just like our society right now. We live in Houston. Most of us are around Houston. And the more crowded we get, and the more conditions we get into where there's so many people, so many things that we deal with daily, sometimes we tend to give up if we think we cannot accomplish something we want to accomplish. In fact, the words that the author of this book uses is that Christian men tend to get passive. And we get passive in the victorious nature that we used to have. We refuse to fight for what's important, or at least what is important to God. And we have to separate those two things. Fighting for ourselves versus fighting for what's important for God may be two different things. We seldom live as though nothing else matters compared to knowing God. Indeed, I'm reading a paragraph from the book of the author that was, I highlighted a whole bunch of paragraphs. This amazing book. He says, indeed, we live as though nothing else matters in the world, and in the process, we lose the battles we must win. I keep that in mind because, yes, as we grow more and more in a society where we have to live among people in a large city or such, we tend to not be as, aggressive about doing what we think is right, or we tend to let others make the decision that might be what we thought was right 10 years ago. We might let it slide this time and let things go by us. But just comment for that. A lot more will go through the book. But I wanted to bring that up because Kyle was pointing out the fact that all these mice became, not only did they become passive, the ladies became aggressive, which the men should have been, and the men became passive, and eventually all died. So we have to fight for this, folks. We have to fight for what's right in our lives and what we believe that the Lord wants us to stand up for, and we can't forget it. And this author is going to talk about this in this book, and the six battles we must win. Toward the end of the chapter, I think Kyle or somebody will probably read those six battles. It's right at the end of the second chapter. But just a thought I want to throw out that's very grabs me very much in this book, right at the first of the chapter.
Well, and you know, back in the day, you know, the disciples, or whatever I started to say, combining those two.
They're both, yeah.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Both of them.
You know, those guys actually walked around with swords and spears and bow and arrows and stuff like that. Battle was something a little different back then, you know. Now, of course, we're talking about a spiritual battle, you know, an angelic, something in a different realm, you know. When we think about fighting now, our lines are very, very skewed in the world we live in today, because, you know, fighting is pushing a button with a nuclear bomb on the other end of it, you know. Then you get into, you know, defense, you know, these guys carried a sword to defend themselves, you know. Then you get into the realm of guns and all of that. Well, we're in a really weird, you know, rabbit trail area here, especially with all the stuff going on, the school shootings, which are now mainstream everyday conversation, you know, that it's hard, I think, for a lot of us to differentiate what it means to actually fight and then take it into a spiritual concept, which a lot of us don't understand to begin with.
I'll go as far as saying I wonder if a lot of this is just mischanneled aggression.
Yes.
Aggression. The author clearly sees, we may not use aggression here, but assertiveness as a value, especially a value that men have and men can use, and that as things get more crowded, many men become afraid of using or are cowed away from using. We're kind of, he talks about it quite boldly and very unpolitically correct, where he says that somehow these traits have to be, these traits that men have are wrong, that feminine traits are somewhat, are better. And not that, and then they go, well, communication, relationship, that's a feminine virtue. No, it's not. It's a human virtue. It's a human thing. Men can cultivate that without becoming feminized. But I also look out at the way boys are treated in classrooms, the way my sons are. And not badly, but, you know, sit at your desk, you know, fidgeting, all the stuff that little boys do has become, you know, give them a drug. This is, you know, mm-hmm. cut right, out the right. recesses, mm-hmm. you know, and expect a boy to sit still in a classroom for 6 straight hours. That's crazy.
They designed fidget spinners for yes. the people of
that's
your
right.
time.
Yes, but
remember we used to click our pins yeah. back in the day.
Anything. Yes, yes.
Anything.
So but I think a lot of this, and this is where we can get back to the more virtuous side of this. This idea of lashing out of is in completely antisocial ways, and certainly in many of the cases, certainly in Florida, there was a case of mental illness. But it's you look at some of the violence in general. It's misdirected aggression and assertiveness that shouldn't be suppressed, but it should be channeled and validated when it is socially helpful and when it is helpful to preserving one's family, one's relationships, and instead now it just goes completely in the other direction.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great point. I mean, if you really look at it, we don't have many things to just take out the aggression, you know. And anything you do can be looked at, you know, that's over the line. And especially if the ladies are here, you know, guys will understand, oh, man, he's just blowing off steam, you know. But the lady is here, you know, it's a totally different thing. You know, they've been, funniest thing, I came across it. I had no idea. The rage room, I think, is what they call it. Have y'all seen these things now?
No. What is the rage room?
The rage room is where you can go and pay somebody, and basically they'll hand you a bat or a pole or a stick or something like that, and you can beat the tar out of things. They said their most popular is TVs and computers, but you know, you can beat up the walls, and you know, it is a channel, although a little crazy, but. I thought it was an interesting thing because I know myself, you know, if you bottle things up like men tend to do, we don't know how to express our emotions. For one, all of this years and years of change and the feminine aspects of, you know, what has transpired, and we don't have a way to do it.
Well, you're absolutely correct. The thing is, we're told to bottle it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my son being in school, and another kid came and picked on him, jumped on his back. I had three individuals who said, your son didn't do anything. In fact, he started to walk away from the guy, and the guy jumped on his back, so my son turned around and hit him. and he got in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is so different from when you and I were in junior high or elementary school. If the other kid started the fight and you whipped him, you didn't get in trouble. The other person got in trouble. Today, what you said, Kyle, is so true. We're told, all of us as men, to suppress our emotions and suppress our anger and suppress our aggression. And but Steve says, like Steve says, if you direct it in a correct way,
positive.
It's going to be absolutely beneficial for you. And in fact, this may be characteristically what God wants you to do, because we are men and we do have certain tendencies, such as the author says, we like to win, whether we play chess, whether we play poker.
Yes.
Whatever we play at, we like to win.
Now, I was thinking about this, I read this, because the whole, he talks about the whole competitiveness aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every poker room in the United States, and probably around the world, but certainly the United States, is open to anyone, man or woman. Mm-hmm. Why are 90% of the poker players
men?
Men.
Yeah.
And now there are, this is, I'm not, ladies, I'm not disagree. There are some excellent women who are women poker players. Jennifer Harmon, professional. Annie Duke, professional. There are some. They're just at the other end. There are probably just as many women as men who are poor poker players. Nonetheless, it's predominantly men who play, It's an intense competitive game, and you literally are, you know, putting your money where your mouth is, or certainly where your cards are, and I think that kind of atmosphere draws more men than it does women, and you can see the result. You don't have to do a study on it. You can see it in any poker room you go into, and that's not true necessarily for all casino games and gambling. Poker is a highly competitive, highly, you know, man against man, you know, battling your wits a lot. Like, I don't know how it goes in the chess world. Certainly we're looking in the Olympics, and there are plenty of women competitors. If I may finish the thought, to go back to thinking about the positives of competition, back when really Nike was up and coming, Nike ran an ad campaign, and they were also pointing to research and statistics. You get women involved in sports, or young girls involved in sports and competition, they develop stronger self-esteem. They don't get into bad habits. They'll stay off smoking, drinking. It is highly unlikely they will get pregnant before getting married. And that's the only time I've heard a male virtue applied to females. Competition, sports, and so it's there,
Well, it's interesting. Maybe you're right. The thing is, girls were brought up to play with dolls and nurture their emotional aspect, where men are brought up to be boys, to play with guns, mm-hmm. play cowboys and Indians, whatever it is. And it may be there is a competitive part in the mm-hmm. girls that is suppressed from the time mm-hmm. they're a little bitty and provided and told to do their emotions, where they do need mm-hmm. some competition in their lives, just mm-hmm. like men, because we can see it all throughout the mm-hmm. Bible. There is contesting situations with men, and there are women who are queens who mm-hmm. have to rule kingdoms. So it's mm-hmm. not an aspect of virtue that should just not be unique to men.
Right.
I would agree with you.
But taking it back, it is definitely in our culture right now. It is, as the author says, a lot of this is frowned upon, or certainly not encouraged, suppressed, or not given the attention perhaps it's due. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, and with the sports, it just adds a lot of discipline mm-hmm. as well, you know, which is what we miss a lot mm-hmm. these days. You know, it's taken out of the home a lot. Mm-hmm. Now it's taking the power away from the family. Mm-hmm. But sports, if the child likes it and is into it, it, much like the military, can add a lot of discipline to somebody, mm-hmm. which is a great thing. You know, but kind of getting back to some of my notes here, you know, when we're talking about sports especially, you know, childhood dreams, you know, he goes on and he's talking about, you know, some of his own mind. I always saw myself doing that three-point shot right at the buzzer, you know. We had a goal in the backyard and stuff like that, mm-hmm. You know, and I like soccer, so, you know, you pull a Pele move on a goalie and, you know, but I never did that. I was never very good. I liked them, but I really have no coordination to speak of. That's why I don't dance. You know, so I never got those, you know, wonderful shots or whatever. And what we eventually learn is that, you know, those lessons can hurt. Life is tough.
Well, the confusion we have in society, again, talking about this, is looking at who should really be police officers, firemen, right? Let's see, they named it a number of police officers, firemen, Marines, fighters, mm-hmm. firefighters. But our society today encourages women to go into those areas, and folks, they're not as strong as men. I mean, I don't believe that it's a good idea to have a lady driving a police car and pull over a man that's 300, 350 pounds behind the wheel to stop her for something she's done wrong. We see the occupations being mixed, or with the two sexes, when clearly the ones who do the masculine part of those particular occupations should be the male. Now, can we have women in the police department? Yes, there is room for them to do administrative work. There's
go ahead.
I know that's politically incorrect. All right, folks, we're talking.
I know you're fake. No,
but there are areas, certain areas of her life, and you just like you shouldn't have a 5'2" male in a police uniform going out there and stopping or trying to wrestle down a 350-foot, 6'6" man either. So if you look at it from certain aspects and certain categories, it's not necessarily our society's blending the occupations, but also, as we said, they're suppressing the male. They want us to suppress ourselves and act more passive and more pliable and more gentle in our ways.
Well, especially in this country. I mean, much like others, they'd rather us be more and more and more of that. If we are, it's easier for them to do whatever they want, you know, because we just sit there and let the world go by. And that's what we've actually become quite a bit of. I've said it for a long time, especially when we get into the political world. You know, we had the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, we left the farm. See, when you're on the farm, although you work and you work very, very hard, but you also have a little bit of downtime in there, for some, anyway. Mm-hmm. If you're like a vegetable farmer, you know, you plow, you plant, you wait. You know, back then you would get into conversations with the neighbor, with your buddy, with your family. You're talking politics, you're involved, you're thinking about it. I couldn't tell you most laws that were passed in the last 5 years. You know, because we don't pay attention to it anymore. Things happen, now it's got so convoluted, you know, for it. Anyway, I'm kind of getting off topic there. But,
well, what you are bringing out, what we're talking about right now, folks, is what men deal with every day, what we see in front of us, what we touch, we feel, we hear, what affects our own lives, our own families. But what we're going to get into is the background behind that, how society is going and where it's headed, folks. And that's the spiritual part of our beings and the spiritual part of our life that we don't really deal with. Most men, like ourselves, just talk about what we see, feel, hear, and touch, what affects our lives, what we can do to improve ourselves and go forward. We don't talk about the spiritual realm that's behind all this and what we're going to do battle with it. And it really does affect our lives, folks. We just don't see it, and we don't talk about it, and we don't think about it.
Well, and, you know, you bring out the senses, and that's, I think I said it last week or Sunday or something. You know, for me, that's always been one of my hardest points to get past in the faith area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then certainly you bring into a third, you know, or a
realm,
and angelic conflicts and the spiritual world and all of that. As a human, you know, we look at most things in the natural world, and that's using those senses. And so, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one out there, but I know I struggle in my faith because I can't see or feel. You know, you're in the worst spot of your life at that moment, and you cry out to God, God, come on, do this, whatever. And then there's quiet. Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't actually pick up the cell phone and call you right back, you know, or text you right back. Actually, Taylor brought that up earlier, you know, with the family and, you know, that immediate God sometimes will wait.
What you just said, the idea of picking up that phone, just in speaking in the news this week, Mike Pence, Vice President, actually said what I hear many people in this very church say, and maybe probably each of us has said it at some point in this room on this podcast, that they have a relationship with the Lord and they try to speak to the Lord and try to hear what the Lord has, you know, mm-hmm. says to them. Now, I am not talking to Jesus if he was sitting right there in that chair, but I am trying to discern some kind of that's what it comes to, spiritual yeah. guidance and discernment. Mm-hmm. Pence was roundly laughed at by mm-hmm. Joy Behar and her media friends. She called him crazy. She called him incompetent to hold office. That, yet there's an example of a man who has this spiritual life, and we're looking at the risks of going public with that. Mm-hmm. And I think it will blow over, but you see an immediate culture pushback mm-hmm. from the idea of this guy's crazy. Mm-hmm. He's having a relationship with something Supreme anybody can hear yeah, or say. Yeah, but yeah. but nonetheless, again, and it's what the culture misses, because I've been in this church now for 5-6 years, maybe more if I count them up. I've heard men and women on numerous occasions talking about their relationship with Jesus, and in the same terms Pence did. So this idea of spiritual warfare is so alien to this culture that yes, that is. you yes, can it and it is and even and actually we're speaking on today to this morning word came that Billy Graham has passed away.
Very good point.
But within my lifetime, I do recall Billy Graham's on television. He goes back way far longer than I have. But there was a time, not too long ago, not in biblical time, not in the 1800s, but in 1950s, 1960s, when a spiritual life was considered part of one's makeup, no matter what political viewpoint that person may have had, male or female. Now, I mean, we get into this, and this book is fairly new. It's, I think it's only about 10 years old, 2002, 2003, a little more than that, 15 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. But we're getting to a period where there is such resistance to the idea that there are, you know, that you can have this religious experience. Certainly mm-hmm. in Christianity terms, culture will welcome other religious experiences, but and because this, as we get to it, it's a lot of it comes down to real moral ethical decision making and coming down on you know, basically I believe in God and this is what I believe is right, and that is scary. That is very scary to a culture that has really embraced relativism more than even when I was in college back in the 70s. I'm going on too long there, but
and dating yourself.
You made a great point, mm-hmm. Steve. That being Christians, we don't talk about the dark mm-hmm. side, as we would mm-hmm. call it, or the spiritual mm-hmm. realm. Because we already know what we have to do to get through it. Where it's so natural to us. And I hadn't forgotten about that, because I've been thinking about that since we started this book. Why don't we talk about this? Because all of us as men know what we need to do. We need to read. Mm-hmm. We need to read. We need to pray. We need to attend church. Talk with our brothers over issues that we're not sure how to handle, if it's maybe in a spiritual realm or not, or even in real life. I've talked to Kyle before. You've talked to me. About issues, we just naturally do it because there is no other direction for us mm-hmm. as Christian men. So for him to bring this battle up into our minds and into our focus again, we go, wow, we don't ever talk about this, but it's there.
It is.
It's absolutely there every day when we get up, when we mm-hmm. pray with our wife, our children, our spouse, whatever it is. We're praying because we know in our heart there's a spiritual battle there to deal with. Right? And we just don't talk about it. Don't even think about it, because we do it so much.
Right. Well, and you know, as men, we yearn for the victory. You know, when we're talking about, yeah. you know, conflict and all of that, you know, we've been just all around that. You know, it's just, we look for it. We crave that thrill, you know, mm-hmm. of I won, mm-hmm. you know. But if you look at today's society, you know, the passivity that, you know, to make these kids passive, and that, well, mm-hmm. you're just as good as everybody else if you're 42nd, you know, and they give everybody a ribbon, you know, oh, you attended here, yeah. you're just as good as that guy that beat the tar out of you,
Yeah.
But you're not. At least not in that area, that whatever.
Whatever the game.
So find what you're good at and go beat the tar out of somebody else. You know, because you may be good at chess, you may be good at poker, or
checkers,
or whatever. Find your avenue and be, like Bill says, be awesome at it. Yes. And go at it and strive, learn, build upon yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be physically strong, emotionally tough, and mentally and spiritually combative. You know,
The author says here, and again, this is what we're talking about. Again, if you realize this is a spiritual realm we're living in, we're living in a physical, but we are surrounded by a spiritual realm that we cannot see. The author says, no weapon of the enemy has been more effective than the barrage of propaganda that hammers us day in, day out, and hammers us away at our thinking and convinces us that, men, we are not warriors, but in fact we are. When we, like you said, warriors, we think of people who carry shields, swords, spears, everything like that, but in fact, you're a spiritual warrior if you stand up what's right for your family. Men, if you protect your wife, your children, and if you disagree with some of the propaganda that says that our boys should not be boys, they should be more integrated into a similar character, and women should be more integrated into a similar character, so that they're closer together in a relationship when they're not. They're just not.
Well, and they're skewing those lines as to what boys should be and girls should be now. You know, of course, we're getting into cloning and all this other stuff, and people are playing God, mm-hmm. You know. But now little boys don't even know if they're supposed to be a male. And it's what society's throwing at
them.
And
you can see it. You can see it around it. Yes, by the way they act.
Right.
Some little boys want to be girls, and some little girls want to be boys. Right.
Right. And, you know, I understand you may look at it and you go, well, you know, maybe easier to be a guy or maybe easier to be a girl. And I can mm-hmm. understand somebody looking at the other sex and going, okay, maybe so. But society's just throwing it at them. Anyway, again, another one of those.
No, it's propaganda.
It is that, exactly, the propaganda. But you mentioned some a minute ago, and Bill, the author, wrote something that really struck me. At birth, we enter the battlefield. At the time of our rebirth in Christ, we are enlisted mm-hmm. in God's armies as warriors of light.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the part that doesn't get brought out. You know, I was baptized just a few years ago. Did we talk about that beforehand? After? No. You know, you pray yourself, you pray with your pastor or whoever's baptizing you, and then you do it. And the rest is all on you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I was really so energetic about this book, was that it's going to just bring out new and interesting conversations that we don't bring to the forefront in most cases, you know.
And keep in mind, another thing your author mentions here, folks, we got to remember that when you have a disappointment in life, you have to look at that and you have to believe that some way God will strengthen you because of it. The author specifically says in this book, the disappointments we face in life are not intended to strip away our manhood. In fact, God allowed every hardship we have experienced to strengthen us if we will allow those to drive us to Him and seek His face and seek Him to help us. Once we tap into the power and unleash the warrior within us, we can win the most ferocious battles, and we will fight like the mighty men of old. This is quoting the author here.
Well, and that's a great segue, actually. Did you have something there?
No, I was going to ask you about that. So go.
You know, the great segue that, you know, the mighty men, David's mighty men, mm-hmm. you know, David, of course, you know, slayed a dragon. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, wrong book, I believe. You know, but he had all kinds of great stuff. He was going to be the destined king, mm-hmm. you know. And then, well, guess what? The king didn't much like that idea, so he's going to send an army after him. So David was a fugitive and on the run and hooked up with a bunch of guys. You know, he's just scouring through the little towns and in the shadows trying to get through and stay alive. Well, you know, when you're in that, you're probably in a bar or something like that, drinking some grog and, you know, talking to the guy next to you. You're commiserating. Oh, man, I'm on the run. And the other guy's down on his luck, you know. And that's what all of these guys were, beaten down for whatever reason, outcasts to their society. And David and ultimately God saw something in each one of these guys, drew them together, and they became known as David's mighty men, you know.
Yes.
And I mean, there was guys out there named Shane, you know. You're called Shame. Your parents named you Shame.
Yeah.
In your whole life, you've been walking around being called Shame. Well, that's got to wear you down. But it also has to build you up. You know, oh gosh, who's this, the song? Boy Named Sue.
Oh, Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, thank you. He's drawing a, blank on it. You know, that he's saying, you know, that... you know, he hated his dad for naming him that, but it also built him up and made him a stronger man by all of the picking and the bullying and everything that would have happened to this guy as a boy named Sue. It's the same thing. All of our beatdowns and our defeats and those disappointments, they ultimately build us up. They make us who we are. And as long as we can stay strong in God and with each other, then we can make mountains, well, move mountains, rather.
There comes a time to face the battles and to run from them. David is a perfect example of that. Folks, if you remember from the Old Testament, David was anointed king over Israel, and he didn't get that position for at least 10 years. And during that 10 years, Saul, as Kyle said, chased him to kill him and tried to kill him so bad. Now, the fact is, David was in a position where he could have killed Saul several times. God opened the door for him to kill Saul if he had wanted to, and he did not do it. Because there's a time to face a battle, folks, in our lives, as you know today. There's a time to face it and a time, and I shouldn't say run from it. Run is not the proper word. There's a time to walk away from it. David had the chance to kill Saul, and he walked away from it because it was in his heart that he believed God would do that. That was God's battle to do. His battles would be to come about and protect the people of Israel when he became king. And he firmly believed that. And you can see that all through the Old Testament. And God sent him warriors that believed the same thing he did. As Kyle mentioned, all these people that supported him. So there is a time to face your battle, and there's a time to not face it or walk away from it and find out right the timing is right.
And certainly reading into this, and the scripture references are 1 Samuel 22, chapter 22, verse 2, first book of Samuel. That's where the mighty men are mustered, so to speak.
Yes.
Later on in 2 Samuel chapter 23, beginning with verse 8, they are actually named, or quite many of them are named, but there are several hundred of them. But what I'm getting at is, besides introducing the scriptures, that none of these guys thought of themselves as warriors. They were not in the king's guard.
No.
They were not. These were volunteers.
Ragtag band.
Yes, a ragtag band.
That's right. They were.
These fell before David enlightened something in them, or enlivened something in them, or made them see something about themselves. They said, the one, as you said, probably one fellow's name translates as Shame. I mean, he's walking around. Who am I?
And hey, Shame.
Suddenly, you know, like poor kid. Like, they do this in school. Dumbass, whatever.
We did.
And you know, these labels get become, you know, identity. And actually, that's one of the next battles, fight for
that's
identity.
Right.
But he creates an army out of ordinary
misfits,
Jewish Hebrew men in the countryside who he runs into in the towns. Mm-hmm. I think that's the essence of the story. You are a warrior and you don't know it, or you may not know it. And God, Lord, may be able to reach into you and enlighten that fire in you. And you become a soldier for the Lord, and maybe not carrying a spear and a shield, but you will have your weapons, your intellect, your mind, your heart, your ability to persuade, all the spiritual gifts that you get in the letters of Paul.
Well, and you know, when we talk about manning up to the full armor of God, mm-hmm. we are talking about, you know, we say it all the time in this class, in this podcast. You know, we take our armor off in this room. You leave yourself vulnerable to the guys here, vulnerable to God for him to come and smack you around as he needs to. But those elements of our armor that they're talking about comes out of Ephesians. Mm-hmm. So the shield of faith. So we are carrying around a metaphorical shield. You know, as you said, we aren't literally running around with that, but that shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth,
yes,
the sword of the Spirit, and the feet prepared with the gospel of peace. You know, and that's what we're supposed to be going into battle with. You know, that shield of faith, you know, that's the first and foremost, you know, that you've got to have a strong faith to be able to pull this off, you know, because it's a spiritual battle. You're not out swinging, you know, you can swing all you want in the backyard, you're not going to hit what you're thinking.
And you know what's interesting, and then Paul, always the great writer, and you can look into this, and as Christians we should remember this, your faith is your shield, not your sword.
Yes.
Your faith is what protects you. It's not your means of attacking other people. That is obviously your sword of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways that's much more positive. Your enthusiasm, let the Lord shine through you. But these are metaphors that should be looked at pretty closely, because I think many Christians use their faith as a sword instead of a shield.
Yes.
That's actually really interesting. I hadn't really thought of that in that manner. Right, they're going into battle swinging their faith. No, that's not right. And I guess I had never really heard it or thought of that. Interesting. Well, I'm going to have to think about that tonight. Just I'll be laying in bed. That one's going to keep hitting me over and over tonight.
It's very important what you said earlier, too. Folks, if you're really serving, men, if you're really serving the Lord, and you're really seeking the Lord's will, He will send men to you to help you through a battle, if you go through a battle. Other men, or even other people, other Christians, and this is what Kyle expressed, and I think Steve is saying, that David, while he was running from Saul, he had a heart to serve the Lord, and his heart was to serve God with all his heart. How many times did I say that? Anyway, the fact is, God sent men to him to become his army and to become his strength. David didn't do all this alone. When he needed help, when he fought the battle with Goliath, he could do it himself because God was with him himself. But when he went out and fought the middle many battles as a nation, as a leader of Israel, God sent many, many people to support him. So the author wants us to believe and know that if we truly have faith in God and we do have to run up against battles, there are other Christians around us that will help us, and they will come and support us if our heart is to serve the Lord and we're doing what is right, like David did.
Well, and as men, we work better, most of the time, work better together. You know, we build each other up, you know. At least that's what we're supposed to do. You know, I know when it comes into that bullying concept or, you know, whatever, you can tear somebody down just as quick and just as easily, you know. But that's what our class is all about. you know, is manning up. Part of that manning up is being there, you know, for your fellow, you know, regardless. Sometimes it's need to talk, sometimes it's just sit quietly, whatever that is, you know. And we need to be able to find those and, you know, find a group like our little class, you know, where you can take your armor off and be yourself and learn, sharpen your sword to go back out there, you know, because you got to have that truth, the belt of truth, you know, and that's sort of the spirit, you know.
Where in Ephesians can you find the... the armor of God?
Ephesians 6. And let's see. Yeah, see, they left that. It's supposed to be 6 and 16.
Okay.
So it starts at like 10. Ephesians 6, 10 goes through 17, I think. But, you know, when we're looking forward now, because we're kind of coming to the end of our time here tonight. And so we are going to move on to chapter 3 this coming Sunday for our class.
You might want to tell us what the six battles are that we're going to have to learn to defeat there. I don't know if you've got it in front of you or not. I've got it in pink there. Of all the colors to use.
You have a different color for each.
Sorry.
Don't you remember you were only supposed to highlight in pink now just to get after Bill. You know, so...
anyway...
Did we even say where we actually are?
In the book or
no? No, in geographically. Oh,
geographically, I was going to close with that, but we are. Bill finds his reference here. Yes, we are coming to you from Sugar Land Baptist Church, Sugar Land, Texas, just outside of Houston, we're just a group of guys. We are in. The Sunday school, we call it the Adult Bible Fellowship here at Sugar Land Baptist, and we meet, we discuss these same things on Sunday right after services. Services are at 9:45 and ABF follows at about 11. So if you're in the area, come on by, and if you're more interested, man up, come up and visit the ABF or visit us here on Wednesday night. We'll gladly have to listen to you. We are on Facebook. You may post a question to us there. Our podcast is on SoundCloud and iTunes. And as Bill likes to say, if you're not in the Sugar Land or Houston area and not a member of a church, please, please find a Bible-based church near you. Find a men's group. And if you don't have a men's group at your church, start one. And I'll go back to Bill, and he'll wrap us up here.
So as I was saying, we're going to do next week, we'll get into chapter 3. We're only going to do half of that chapter. We're going to break it into 2 weeks. I thought this was a really outstanding chapter, and we'll get into a whole lot. But as Mike said, this is six battles every man must win. So the actual line there, so in battle one is going to be fight for your identity. Battle two is fight for your personal holiness. Three, fight for your family. Four, fight through the pain. Number five is fight for your friends. And then six, most importantly, is fight for a strong faith. So we're going to get into some pretty hard-hitting information. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you're following along with this, please shoot us something on Facebook and let us know you're out there. And we'll read whatever you got here on the podcast next week. Thank you all so much. Look forward to being here for you each week.
Can I mention one thing?
Go ahead.
Close off. Steve Titch mentioned this earlier in the broadcast, folks. I just want to take a moment and thank the Lord for sending Billy Graham to our lives and into this world. He, as Steve Titch mentioned, he died. And this is by far one of the greatest, greatest ministers of this country, and saw possibly thousands, possibly millions of people bring them to the Lord. God used him as a great warrior, honest, moral, ethical, just a tremendous man of God. And I just want to take a moment to honor him and and thank the Lord for sending him to us, because he was outstanding, outstanding minister and evangelist.
Well, thank you, and I think we'll just close on that. Guys, thank you for being with us. Mike Cropper,
yep,
Kyle Trahan, who is leading us through this book. The book, again, is Six Battles Every Man Must Win by Bill Perkins. See you next time.
You've been listening to Man Up.
You've got answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dedicated to the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You can contact us on Facebook under Man-Up. Post questions, and we'll answer them right here on the Man Up Podcast.